What is up, everybody? It is a very special Saturday night episode. Well, actually, a crossover episode slash live stream of Doomed with Matt Binder and the Shitpost podcast hosted by Jared Holt. I'm Matt Binder.
I'm Jared Holt. And, you know, Matt, we're really getting in the habit here of teaming up and slamming our heads together for these major political events now. So this is a bit of a tradition, and I'm looking forward to just like ripping my hair out with you this evening.
Right. And I should say, I think I've made this joke already the last time you were on, but I'm going to do it again as a callback to our RNC marathon. This is night one of our impeachment trial.
No. This is the only night of the impeachment.
All right. I usually do this show on Thursday nights, you know, give or take. Most nights it's I would say about 75% of the time the show's on Thursday night. But the way the impeachment trial was going, I was like, they're going to ramp this thing up pretty quickly. Why am I going to do my weekly show on Thursday when it's going to be out of date the very next day? Who knows when this vote's going to happen? But then for a split second today, maybe for about an hour today, I even DM'd you and I was like, whoa, maybe this is going to go on a few more days than I thought. I assumed that there was going to be an extension to the impeachment trial because they were going to call witnesses. Now, maybe we're jumping right into the middle here because we haven't even set the stage for the impeachment yet. But I really thought that we were going to see an actual trial and not just a handful of days just so they can do a handful of days so they could, you know, so the Democrats could, you know, shame Trump with their finger, you know, point their finger and wag it at him. And then pretty much that's it, really. That's really all that happened.
Yeah, you know, I was looking and it's like, okay, you know, they want to call witnesses. Okay, it looks like maybe they will call witnesses. And like the, you know, I was thinking like, okay, here we go. This is going to get like real. You know, we're going to have Capitol police officers. We're going to have members of Congress, you know, researchers, whatever, like it really laying this out, sharing the personal side of this. And then they were just kind of like, you know, the car is running outside. I need to get to the airport.
It's even better than the airport, actually. According to a piece in Politico, a senior House Democratic aide said that Senator Chris Coons of Delaware, who's sitting in Joe Biden's old seat in the Senate, apparently told the House managers of the trial, the jury is ready to vote today. People want to go home for Valentine's Day. It's stunning. Did you know that one? Did you see that?
No, I didn't. That's so sweet. Too early to be feeling like this right now.
I mean, what is going on here? Like this, like, how can you say that? Like, listen, I know people who watch this show. We probably have a whole variety of people watching this show. And I'm sure my usual leftist audience is saying to Tang right now, Matt, are you seriously shocked that he would say that? Honestly, the Valentine's Day specifically thing, I'm a little shocked that a grown man would say that in the Senate, to be quite honest. Like, I really am. Like, it is beyond belief that you would actually verbalize that, even if it's the truth, which wouldn't surprise me that that's the reason. It's the fact he actually said, oh, we got to get home for Valentine's Day, guys.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see today, like a lot of people's brains kind of break in real time. You know, I'm talking mostly like the MSNBC binge watchers who, you know, are like, here we go, we're impeaching this guy. And the case is so strong that Republicans will have no choice but to impeach former President Trump. And then, you know, essentially everyone looking around the room. And the Republicans just being like, yeah, I don't give a shit what you say. You know, I'm not going to do this. And
right.
Then,
right.
I kind of, you know, like, on a pragmatic scale, I guess I like kind of, I guess, sympathize where it's like, OK, literally nothing you say or do It's the old Donald Trump quote about, like, I could walk on a Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and these people would still be loyal to me. It's that, except it's impeachment and it's after, like, one of the most horrific things that has happened in our nation's history. And I don't know, man. I just, like, people's brains were breaking, and I just, like, saw the – all I could think about was that astronaut meme where, like, the two astronauts are above the Earth and one's like, wait, the Senate Democrats, you know, aren't going to take this all the way? And then, like, the guy in the back being like, they never do.
Right. I know. I could pull that up for the live streamers right now so they could see it. I pulled that meme when you sent it to me via – there it is. Yeah. Well, you know, I think we should set the stage a little bit here, though. I mean, we'll go all the way back to January 6th in a second, but I want people to know that, you know, Jared and myself, we're not sitting here thinking that Donald Trump was actually going to be impeached and the Republicans were going to, vote to convict him. We were not thinking that. But the whole premise from the Democrats that they were going to even do this impeachment after he had already been booted from office via the presidential election was that, you know, this needs to be on the books here. History needs to show that this is what happened and we did something about it and we laid the case out for the books, for the record to show. But the whole idea of rushing this thing over 4 days and not calling any witnesses literally flies in the face of that. They will not get so much into the record by wrapping this up so Chris Coons could go home to his wife and give her a big smooch tomorrow on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's, you know, the point is you want to fill in the record. And in theory, you would want to fill it in with as much, you know, granular detail as possible. And, you know, I will rewind and say that in a normal world, I think that the House Democrats impeachment case was incredibly strong. You know, they did their homework. They brought, I mean, really all they had to do was just walk through a timeline of this shit, right? And, like, it's very clear what happened. Everything mm-hmm. supports their side. Everything supports the fact that Donald Trump incited an insurrection. And, you know, I was genuinely impressed with, like, how thorough they were.
And this was not to cut you off. Remember where you were, because we'll go right back to you. I just want to point this out. A much stronger case than the almost month-long Russiagate impeachment trial. A much stronger case. And they took something like 20 some odd days. I think it was 21 or 22 days to lay that case out. This one, I mean, instead of just dealing with Mueller's report, there was probably, I don't know how many hours of footage of people literally vocalizing, we did this because Donald Trump told us to. I mean, yeah, get any more in your face than that.
Yeah, it the whole Republican position is just like, well, he's not president anymore, so we can't impeach him. But like, he was impeached when he was president. This passed the House. This is just the trial part. So don't believe any of that bullshit for a split second. That is not like the senators that are claiming that assume you are stupid. When you're listening to it, they are betting on that, and you can prove them wrong or you can go along with it. That's all I'll say. But, like, you know, going back to what I was talking about is that this case was, like, ultra strong. Right. And I think the fact that, like, the House Democrats on the, you know, the impeachment managers, the fact that they put in so much legwork, got so many details, presented it in a way that was, I thought, very convincing, very damning. And then the Senate is just like, all right, boys, we done here? We're good? All right, I'll see you guys later. Like, just kind of was like, thank you for that. That was very cute. We'll see you guys after recess. And then bailed me. It's just, like, so disappointing to me.
Right. I want to just name who I thought especially did a good job. You know, the lead manager, Representative Jamie Raskin, did I thought he did a good job laying out the case. And another standout to me was Stacey Plaskett, who walked us basically through all the video footage. You know, I thought the two of them especially did a very compelling job at laying the case out. You know, and, you know, you and I have pored through all the available footage out there. And obviously we didn't have, and you know, when I mean available footage, I mean the people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th for Donald Trump. They filmed so much of this, and it was up on Parler. And when Parler was taken down, there were, you know, a trove of archives of all the videos uploaded that day on Parler that was put out there, you know, onto Facebook, onto Twitter, so much of the stuff we went through. But we obviously didn't have access to, like, the security cam footage from inside the Capitol. And Stacey Plaskett walked us through, I think it was on day two, some of the security cam footage that really shows, like, just even stuff that we didn't even know. Like, for example, some of the senators were minutes from running right into the Trump mob that was once they broke into the Capitol.
Yeah, every, like, new detail we get about the January 6th attack just makes it, like, more and more horrifying. And, like, as terrible as it was just, like, it's crazy. It's like an action movie, you know, where they, like, slide under the door at the last second. Like, we were a matter of, like, 45 seconds or, like, 90 seconds in different situations away from something like way worse than even January 6th was.
Right. I mean, I'm just trying to square the idea that someone like I was reading the other day, the QAnon shaman, he is facing something like 28 years in prison for breaking into the Capitol and going to the Senate chambers. And Trump, who we literally have video of the QAnon shaman coming out that day and saying, yeah, I did this for Trump. And the reason he left was because he said he saw Trump's tweet saying to go home now. And he was like, OK, I guess we proved our point. Trump's telling me to go home. I mean, I'm leaving. You know, he is going to go to prison for some amount of time. I think 28 years is a bit much for him specifically. But
yeah,
I mean, that's also the thing, too. And I think this is a discussion that people who really look into the right have more of a lay of the land on this than what I see out there in the mainstream. I see a lot of people who really want to see all these people who went in there go down. And the fact of the matter is, you do have like your militia groups and your Proud Boys who knew what they were doing and were doing it for the cause that they are 100% down for with a completely sane mind. I mean, in the way that you can be as sane as you can as a far-right person to begin with. But then you have someone like the QAnon shaman who is clearly mentally ill and believes these outside, like, out of this world conspiracy theories that, you know, 28 years, I mean, he's not going to get the help he needs with 28 years in prison, I'll tell you that much. But my point of bringing that up is, and Trump is going to get away with nothing. Zero. Like, he's, you know, they did it for him. This is like putting away the people who actually did what Charles Manson told them to do and not putting away Charles Manson.
Yeah, in any other case, if you and I were walking down the street and I was like, Matt, I'm going to need you to smash the window of that storefront right now. And you're like, what? Why? And I'm like, the Chinese government has compromised the building. And unless you break the window, everyone you know is going to die. And then you like busted through the window. When people try to figure out what happened there, I would probably have to answer a lot of questions, you know, and we didn't even get so much as like Trump appearing at this thing. You know, the Trump defense was so much of a joke. Like, half of it was just, like, clips of Democrats being like, and we're going to fight to take back this country. And then they're like, seems like we're not the only ones that use the word fight. And it's just like, again, like, with this whole senator's excuse of, like, well, we don't want to impeach a former president. Like, they assume that the base is stupid. Like, it's hard for me to just, you know, be more diplomatic about that, but they take them for rubes and just feed them garbage. And I mean, I don't know, man. I guess it works. That's the saddest part.
Right. I mean, I do wonder that there was seven senators, Republican senators, who crossed over and voted to convict Trump, which honestly should be seen as a small consolation prize. I mean, I'm not going to say victory because that's not, but it should be seen as something, you know, the impeachment, the House managers did their job of convincing someone who didn't even vote to impeach Trump to let the thing go forward. Like the guy, one of the voters, I forgot who it was, but there were only six people who agreed that it was constitutional to six Republicans who agreed it was constitutional to impeach Trump. But seven of them ended up voting to impeach, to convict him. I mean, that should be seen as a strong case that you were able to convince someone who didn't even think the thing should have went down.
Right. Yeah, it's a huge win in the marketplace of ideas for.
Well, I mean, okay.
This is what I've been. Okay, let me get my thoughts together. So Mitch McConnell, you know, put out a statement, explained his vote to acquit Trump, and I've been thinking about it like all afternoon, where he, you know, essentially, you know, he says verbatim, this is from a statement from his office, they, meaning the people who attacked the Capitol, did this because they had been fed wild falsehoods by the most powerful man on earth because he was angry he'd lost an election. Former President Trump's actions preceding the riot were a disgraceful dereliction of duty. And then he's like, but yeah, we're going to acquit him. Don't, like, you know,
he's the one who put it out in the beginning, like weeks ago, that he signaled that he might. I mean, I wouldn't have taken the word of anyone who said this, but he clearly pulled one over on a number of reporters who wrote pieces stating that McConnell is floating the idea of actually voting to convict Trump. I mean, again, if I was told that, I'd be like, I'll believe it when I see it. I ain't writing that shit yet. But
you're right.
But the idea was that this was floated to people. So, I mean, clearly McConnell had some, you know, McConnell is a pretty, you know, whenever we talk about 10-dimensional chess from Trump or the Democrats, you know that's bullshit. But if it's coming from McConnell, I mean, you've seen the guy knows how to play everybody.
Yeah, it's and at some point it's like Lucy with the football Charlie Brown situation, where it's like, you know, how many times does someone like McConnell or like some Republican have to be like, my mind, it's, you know, it's open. We'll see the facts. Oh, I'm just going to fall on the party line anyway. I mean, I just keep thinking about this McConnell thing, man, because it's like he basically, like, the SparkNotes too long didn't read version of McConnell's statement is like, yeah, everything that the House Democrats said is pretty much true, and I pretty much agree with it. You know, there is, he says, quote, and he said this a couple weeks ago, there is no question that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for the events, for provoking the events of that day. And this guy, like, if there's one thing that Republicans get that it seems that Democrats just, like, cannot understand, it's what it means to, like, hold and wield power. Like, they just don't play hardball, and they should. They should, you know, from a pure, like, cynical political position, this impeachment trial should have lasted 6 months. Man, if I had to sit through, like, 2 years of fucking Benghazi hearings, I want to hear some impeachment stuff, you know?
This was the interesting one, to be honest. I mean, I thought the Russiagate trial was, I mean, listen, I'm glad they impeached him for it, but I thought, you know, the evidence that they were presenting was actually, honestly, for all the love libs and the hashtag resistance showed Mueller, his report wasn't all that great, to be quite frank, and didn't really show what the, you know, was no slam dunk. And here we have we had a juicy, you know, we could have shown literally days of just the videos out there We could have had janitors and, like you said, Capitol Police and staffers and Senate aides and House aides and a whole array of people who were there on the 6th. Could have had them sit there as witnesses and tell their story. And, you know, how powerful would that have been? Again, even if the result was the same, to have all this on the record, all these people's personal stories of what their unique experience was on January 6th, as some of them clearly worried about their safety and their lives, you know, that could have all been out there. And they just they rushed it in 4 days because, again, Jared, the Democrats have to go smooch their babes tomorrow for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, the other claim, too, is that, like, they think, you know, they're trying to exploit the fact that so many people are hurting during the coronavirus to be like, well, we have to, you know, these votes are settled. Everyone's made up their mind at this point. So we need to just get this over with and move on to passing, you know, coronavirus relief. The $1,400 plus $600 that you received under Trump. And I, you know, from what I understand, is like that's not even on the docket until March. And also, a lot of, you know, Democrats specifically who were pushing for impeachment, you know, to appear before the Senate had said things specifically about, like, oh, no, we can pass, you know, these relief bills and also do impeachment. It's not one or the other. But now that everybody wants to get home for the holiday weekend in D.C., you know, apparently the Senate can only do one thing at a time now. It's just so disheartening. Disheartening.
Know, I'm glad you brought that up because Alex Perrine pointed that out from one of David Axelrod's tweets. None of those David Axelrod said, none of those who disdain the Dems for reaching a deal to move the trial forward are the Americans who are desperate for help, for work, for vaccines, for work, for vaccines, for their children to be back at school. The other path would have tied up the Senate for weeks. They made the right decision. Literally doing, you have these establishment Dems who never would say that type of stuff, pulling the whole, like, being, like Alex Perrine said verbatim, being Bernie bro. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is ridiculous that they'd bring this up as a defense when the Dems fail, because they did not bring that up as a reason the Dems should change their priorities before this all went down to begin with. They were saying the opposite before this.
Right. It's so just inconsistent and puzzling, and it's hard for me to imagine this isn't going to cost Democrats with their voters later down the road. I know that, you know, today I took just a very quick peek on some of the, like, different right-wing spaces, you know, the most prominent being a statement that Trump put out, you know, claiming, quote, "This has been yet another phase of the greatest witch hunt in the history of our country. No president has ever gone through anything like it, and it continues because our opponents cannot forget the almost 75 million people, the highest number ever for a sitting president, who voted for us just a few short months ago." That's not the high. You lost, dude. It's objectively, well, not the highest.
It is true, actually. It is the
oh, really?
Highest. It is the highest the sitting president has ever received. The only problem
sitting president.
Right. The only problem is his opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden, got more votes than the 75 million. So, you know, technically he's correct. And that is, you know, that is crazy, though. Like, that is something that the Democrats should be worried about, that, you know, and you have to believe that 75 million who came out for Trump, much more reliable to come out than the 80 some odd million who just wanted to see Trump go when they came out and voted for Biden. Like, all those Dems were out there saying, you know, after all this has tarnished Trump, I'm not so worried, even though he wasn't convicted. You should be, because 75 million people came out. You know, after that, really, you know, Trump got really, like, a really stunningly, honestly, I mean, Hillary did too, but the 2016 turnout was stunningly, like, depressed. It was, like, not that great. So the fact that his base grew over those 4 years, that included everything he did, including the pandemic, should really worry you. Like, usually presidents, like Obama didn't get more votes the second time around. He got less votes in 2012 than he did in 2008. So the fact that Trump had the opposite happen should honestly worry you, really.
If you think this impeachment trial is going to serve as any deterrent for Trump, if it's like embarrassed him or shamed him, that statement I was reading from just a minute ago ends like this. Our historic, patriotic, and beautiful movement to make America great again has only just begun. In the months ahead, I have much to share with you, and I look forward to continuing our incredible journey together to achieve American greatness for all of our people. There has never been anything like it. We have so much work ahead of us, and soon we will emerge with a vision for a bright, radiant, and limitless American future. This sounds like he still thinks he's president or something, but, I guess slightly more polished. It seems that maybe this was written by a PR shop and signed by him rather than vice versa. But
right. Oh, I mean,
but,
I mean,
but, if you know, he's not going away, man. He's going to duck his head down for a minute, let something else catch the news, and then he's going to pop back up. And I think, you know, the fact that so many Republican senators were, you know, afraid to vote to impeach him or afraid to vote to prevent him from trying to mobilize any shit like this again, we're not quite out of the woods here. Biden taking office and Trump going, you know, was a huge step in a better direction, but it's not the end game. Like, people are getting arrested for attacking the Capitol on January 6th. These groups are kind of splintered and in a state of flux right now, but that's not the end. Like we are.
Oh, this is kind of like. This is going to be the worst. It's going to go back to like 2015, 2016 levels, where the online and the actual on the ground movement right wing is going to grow, because obviously that happens when they're not in power.
Yeah, they become dissidents instead of bootlickers, and everybody likes an underdog. That's,
yes,
you know, it's a recruiting thing. People get angry at the administration, angry at the government. They say, well, we're angry too, join this group. You know, it's easier. Well, I don't want to say easier, but, you know.
It's a different dynamic.
It's a different dynamic. And historically, you know, those sort of flux periods have, you know, kind of shown to be big drivers of recruitment.
Right. I gotta quickly shout out. We got a few super chats in the YouTube live stream. $50 super chat from Jacob.
What?
Thank you, Jacob. I know.
Whoa.
And then guess who joined the chat and threw me a 20? Good old Michael Hayden.
Mike Hayden, my boy. What's up?
Hell,
man?
Yeah. Everyone should check out Mike. Mike Hayden's been on this show before, and he's been on your show before. He's been on Doomed, and he's been on Shitpost. For a second, I forgot this episode's going on both of our podcasts. So I gotta make sure I name what show I'm talking about when I'm talking about a show. yeah, Mike, you got to come back on this show soon, man. I got to reach out to you, and we'll set it up. And I'm going to also say that Jared's going to have you on again soon. I'm making that call.
All right. Thank you, producer Matt.
What I think about that is, I think if Trump was still on social media, he would absolutely be chiming in on every single little thing happening in the day. He'd be scrutinizing every movement of the Biden administration, obviously. And he would be playing some sort of like shadow president role, to be honest. Him not being on Twitter and Facebook is making it substantially harder for him to do that. Although, who knows how long he'll be off Facebook. I have a feeling that's going to be I don't know which way it can go, but I think there's a 50-50%. There's a 50-50 chance that Trump's back on Facebook, and he'll probably use that as Twitter. For anyone who doesn't know.
And the Facebook is like way more effective for Trump. Like, Trump uses the way that I kind of compartmentalize it, and this isn't like clean compartments, right? There's absolutely overlap, but as far as like Trump campaign strategy or Trump White House strategy, it was always like manipulate the press on Twitter, manipulate the people on Facebook.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of people of memory hold the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, which was like that is the Trump campaign, or was the Trump campaign's like bread and butter, which is just leveraging the fact, you know, that advertisers can buy these like hyper specific profiles and then just like mass targeted ads. So it's, you know, if he goes back on Facebook, he's still going to be this like huge driver of disinformation and harm. So I'm curious to see what Facebook is going to do there.
Right. Well, it's not up to Facebook, really. You're absolutely right for saying that. He loved Twitter, and that's where he posted. But when his campaign would copy and paste his tweets on Facebook, the engagement from the actual base and not like the right-wing pundits and personalities was much higher on Mark Zuckerberg's platform. But yeah, for people who don't know, Facebook has an oversight board now, made up of different people of all sorts of political stripes, professors, vice presidents of the Cato Institute. And they're an independent organization who now makes decisions for Facebook when it gets – they're sort of like the Supreme Court of Facebook. And Facebook kicked over their decision to ban Donald Trump to the oversight board. And – the oversight board has already put out some of their decisions, and one decision was truly baffling to me, where they reversed a decision where someone posted that photo of that Syrian boy who washed up on the shore of the beach in Europe, who he died of trying to leave Syria, I believe it was. And with that photo, he left the caption, "There's something truly wrong in the mind of the Muslim male," or something like that. Mm. And Facebook oversight board reversed that decision and forced the decision to take that post down and forced Facebook to put that back up, saying that that wasn't hate speech towards Muslim people. So, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with the Trump decision, to be quite honest with you. They are a mixed bag, it seems. Who knows?
Yeah, and it's they're a mixed bag domestically. When it comes to foreign governments, they're really not that confused by this. You know, like in Venezuela, you know, Charlie Kirk's vacation home location. But whenever there was like sort of regime change there, Facebook like de-verified and re-verified like the new president of Venezuela, and it's like, you know, that's Facebook making like this executive call when that country was in a state of flux and like the U.S. military was being like weighed to be deployed or whatever, so and like taking down inauthentic account networks, that sort of stuff in foreign countries. Like Facebook, it seems to like get most confused about what happens here. You know, than it does. It's much less forgiving in the rest of the world.
Right. Right. I mean, it honestly wouldn't, you know, I do sort of have a, you know, maybe this is a conversation for another episode, but I do sort of have a, you know, I'm not going to die on the hill that Trump shouldn't be banned from a platform. It's obviously these platforms' choice to do that. But, you know, I do wrestle with the fact that, you know, it's sort of crazy that these companies, which basically own the you know, where most people are online, where they hang out and do their social networking, you know, they could take someone down like that. But again, I'm not going to die on the hill of Trump. But yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he was back on Facebook. But Twitter's already made it clear they're not bringing him back. But who knows, though, down the line? That's another thing, too. I always wonder, how long are these bans for? Like, when they say forever, like, how long really is forever, though? Like, is like Twitter going to still ban Trump, like, 40 years, 50 years down the line if it gets – well, he's going to be – yeah, he's old. But I'm talking about for anybody
forever,
else who knows,
ever,
you know?
Forever, ever?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, they could – yeah. You know, who knows what can convince them otherwise? Can they be convinced, you know? But anyway, I wanted to now shift, still talking impeachment, but let's talk January 6th a bit more, because you and your why don't you tell everyone what you do and where you work now? I know your podcast listeners probably know at this point, but remind the doomed listeners.
So I am not at Right Wing Watch anymore. I left that was last fall, and I've been working with the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab. A lot of my work hasn't been super public, but recently it was. We published this report, this timeline of the whole Stop the Steal campaign from its inception to like the very first mention of it to January 6th, and laid it all out in this report that when we put it in a PDF, it was like 109 pages. It's a monster. It takes like half an hour to really read, but if you take the time and sit down to read it, it will, you know, it makes abundantly and, you know, it's detailed, crystal clear what happened, how it formed, where the momentum was churning. And I, you know, my takeaway from the report is it shows beyond any sliver of a doubt that this was incited and encouraged by Trump. And I don't, like, looking at the timeline once it was done, I just don't see this timeline working without Trump. Like, his points along the way are crucial. I mean, the January 6th rally was his idea, you know? And the timeline kind of suggests that, like, maybe he was kind of in on the planning, or someone from the White House was in on the planning to some degree, because the websites for these marches launched like within hours of Trump saying that. And if you know anything about web design, building an entire website from the ground up in a couple hours, pretty hard. So, you know, there's just a lot of like weird little nuggets in that report that, you know, really, I think just, you know, I'm proud of it. It's the most comprehensive timeline that anyone's published so far. And, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things that we keep looking back to. And if people read it and, you know, learn the lesson from it, see what the turning points were, see what the how this was built, maybe we can get ahead of it next time.
What is the furthest – do we know what the furthest back on the record mention of January 6th in some fashion from Trump is? At least in public, I mean, obviously on the record means like in public, you know, public statement or proclamation. Do we know, do we have that on a timeline when he first started talking about it?
It was a tweet. You know, it was that tweet where it's like some Peter Navarro thing, I think. And then it's like, come to DC on January 6th, going to be a big, wild protest. And, you know, nobody was really talking about January 6th until Trump tweeted that. So, like, this whole thing was his idea, is the point. Like, he came up with this, or, like, he and his aides, or he and these organizers, like, came up with this day.
Right. I mean, I had seen January 6th going around in the QAnon circles. But honestly, those folks tend to really be online. They don't really, like, you know, the Proud Boys, Patriot Prayer, Oath Keepers, various other groups, you know, they go out there on the streets, but the QAnon folks usually just spread their stuff online and don't show up. So if this remained just a January 6th, just another date for the QAnon lore, you know, they probably wouldn't have shown up if it wasn't for Trump saying it.
Yeah, no. I mean, they wouldn't have. And you mentioned the QAnon shaman guy. Like, specifically, he was like, I'm here because Trump wants me to be here. Oh, I'm leaving because Trump said to leave. Like, you know, I mean, like, the discussions of January 6th that we had seen is, you know, I saw the same thing in these QAnon groups, which is just like, you know, some deadline will pass. And then they just, like, flick through the calendar and try to find like something a few weeks out, you know, enough time to like get some Patreon money or get some like whatever, like, you know, these influencers like figure out like, okay, something in a few weeks from now so we can like properly squeeze it of cash. And then, you know, they were focused on the Electoral College certification. They thought Mike Pence was going to, you know, whip out the ace of spades from his jacket and be like, aha, like a bad like Yu-Gi-Oh scene or something.
Oh man, I saw some I forget what I'm having a mental block right now. Some like fantasy booking actually of what Pence was going to do, and I saw everything from like he takes the electoral vote envelope and he holds it up and rips it to shreds in front of Congress, and then like declares that Trump will be. Remain president. It's just I saw some bizarre things they thought was going to happen.
Yeah, it. But like as far as a rally, you know, that was Trump's idea.
Right, right. And you know the idea, and this came out. Who was that? Who was the? Oh, I'm having a. I should have had this in front of me. Who was the that House Republican who just put out that statement last night? And the reason they decided to skip over the witnesses because they put this on the record here.
I know what you're talking about. It's another one of those cases where I've like read the name but never said it out loud, so I'm just gonna butcher it so bad if I try.
This is pandemic life when you never see anyone in person and just read everything in front of you, so you have no idea how to pronounce anything because no one's telling you how to pronounce anything. But anyway, this Republican House member put out a statement last night detailing Kevin McCarthy's phone call with Trump when he was in the Capitol on January 6th. And Trump was basically refusing to call the protesters off. And again, I don't want to make it sound like Trump could actually, you know, say... you know, he could actually say, all right, fall back, boys. But clearly, him putting out a statement meant a lot to a majority of the people there, being that they're on video saying we left because of Trump. So he was asked to put out some sort of statement so that they would back down. And he refused and said something to the effect of, it looks like those protesters care more about the election results than you do. You know, it's just, and also he apparently at first blamed Antifa on the phone as, I know this is not what happened, but I'm imagining like Trump on the phone with a Republican who's literally getting beat over the head with a Trump flag and Trump going, it's Antifa, don't worry about it.
You see, these Antifas are obviously, you know, dressed up in Trump gear and listening to my words to make me look bad. Like it is so stupid.
It is the funniest thing.
The thing with the senators, the thing they assume the base is stupid and too often they're rewarded for it. And that like I used to get angry about it, but now it just like breaks my heart that so many people can like listen to that and just go like Yep. Damn liberals can't stand it. And it's like, I don't know, man. I just like, how do you pull back from that brink? That's what I'm struggling with.
Right.
Like, I don't know the answer to that question.
By the way, the statement was from a Republican representative. It was someone put it in the chat for me, and it just flew by.
Herrera
Butler.
Is it Butler? Butler?
Butler or Butler, something like that.
See, this is the problem, man. I'm a writer. You know, I can spell it, but
also it's not like she's one of the more well-known Congress people. I don't think I've ever come across her name before, to be quite frank. you ever noticed that? Like there's always like just like a handful, like maybe like half a dozen Congress people whose name you've come across like the first time in literally ever, just like, and I've just been like, whoa, that person's in Congress. There's always a handful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. A lot of the, you know, I grew up in Arkansas. A lot of our representatives are kind of like that. Like, have you ever heard of French Hill?
No.
He's in Congress.
There
he
we
represents
go.
Arkansas.
There we go. Yeah. Who knew? I'm sure people in Arkansas don't even know. To be honest with you, I mean,
Voter turnout's pretty bad.
And I just want to make it clear that's not an attack on the fine people of Arkansas. That's an attack on French Hill for doing a terrible job of making himself a household name.
Yeah, seriously, it doesn't. You know, I guess it doesn't help him that he sounds like a brand of potato chips, but like, it's.
I was gonna say
he'll be doing some more.
I was gonna say an ice cream company, but maybe it could be either. I guess.
Yeah, French Hill, but. Yep. Yeah, it sounds tasty. But I just want to pivot. You know, we'll take the super chats and some questions from the audience, I guess. But you know, something I'm curious your thoughts on. I'll share mine. Is kind of what the fallout is going to be. So for me, it's like, you know, I want to preface this being careful to say that like I'm not trying to fearmonger or scare anybody, but I am going to share like my concerns having observed this movement on a daily basis, and you know, every day before and after the Capitol attack, like as recently as today, is like my concern. The thing that keeps coming to my head is like acquitting Trump here kind of signs the permission slip to like do this again. You can like Republicans look at this, and the only like measurable effect of impeachment would have just have been to like put Trump in the penalty box and like not let him back onto the ice to like run for president again, right? But like even though that is like a pretty minor punishment for doing something so terrible, Republicans couldn't even like bring themselves to do that. And I worry that that is essentially just going to give a waiver to people who are maybe more competent than Trump. I'm talking about the Josh Hawleys of the world, the Tom Cottons, I mean, whoever it is. Ted Cruz will probably try to run again. And like, if Republicans look at this and they think that like disinformation and, you know, aiming extremists in violent attacks to try to assassinate their colleagues is like how to do politics, and someone smarter comes along, what's that going to look like? You know, that's dark. Sorry for going there, but like, I just keep wondering that.
Right. No, honestly, I don't think any of those people are going to be the next Trump. I think we haven't seen the next Trump yet, to be honest.
It's you, man. It's you.
Don't let it go to my head now. I could 75 million people are doing anything I say. I mean, that might really. Ooh. But
we're gonna make America great again, and also go to patreon.com/.
No, Matt Binder. Don't give the wrong one. It's / Matt Binder, because again, you're not just supporting the podcast, you're supporting everything I do, including the podcast. So your buck really goes far. I'm letting you know. First of all, if I had 75 million people at my beck and call, I would be doing things to help people. For example, I would say we should do a mass protest to make sure everybody has a income during the pandemic, at the very least. For sure, healthcare for everybody for good, period. And you know, I take it from there. You know, that's sort of the thing, though. Like, you know, I feel like people on, you know, people who are, you know, anti-establishment or leftists or anarchists, you know, you look at January 6th and it's sort of like, you know, what if, like, it's sort of scary that, like, these people did this for an authoritarian leader, and the whole point of them doing this was just to get him reinstated as president. Like, listen, I'm not saying people should get hurt, or obviously, because, you know, 7 people died, but imagine we could just get tens of thousands of people just to show up in front of the Capitol and demand Medicare for all or something that will help people. You know, if there was someone like Trump on the left who had that sort of, again, just talking about how just they love him or whatever, you know, that would be, we could help people, you know, the fact that, you know, just imagine being in Trump's shoes and just being such a selfish bastard It just, you know, it's so ridiculous. Like, you always, as a leftist, dream of, like, you know, a huge protest movement. A general strike is a perfect example. A mass movement of people just saying, I'm not taking part in this anymore until things change and the current system actually reverts in a way that helps people. And, you know, but no, we got all these people who are ready to, like, fucking attack their congresspeople with Trump flags in the name of their beloved billionaire leader who just wants to continue being president so he can build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border and hurt people during a pandemic and tell Muslim people they can't see their families overseas and split up immigrant families when they arrive here in this country. I mean, it's just, you know, it just, that's the most depressing thing to me, quite honestly. That, like, you know, if the roles were reversed and it was the different political ideology that took to the streets for good, again, without the disgusting stuff that the Trump people did, you know, imagine what we could do in this country for everybody.
Yeah, and that's, I think it's just so crucial to just keep the pressure on, like, for accountability for what happened on January 6th, like, okay, impeachment comes and goes, but, like, this conversation isn't over. I imagine there will be investigations, committee hearings, etc., but, like, this is still, like, I also worry that a lot of people are just going to be like, well, he wasn't impeached, what did you expect? And then just completely unplug. And this is just going to be like memory hold with the rest of, like, every god-awful thing that's happened these last few, like, 4 or 5 years. And it really shouldn't be memory hold. In fact, if there was, like, one or two things to, like, not memory hold, this would probably be the one not to memory hold. But we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. I try my best to maintain cautious optimism. But I'm often disappointed.
I mean, it was memory hold the next day. Like, it was that same day, actually. They were already trying to literally, we just talked about it before, how all of a sudden Trump saying, I want you all to go down there, and all of Trump's base, from the QAnon folks to the Proud Boys, online for a week saying, we're going down there. And them saying for years that Antifa wears masks to cover their face. And then you have a couple tens of thousands of people down there without masks, carrying Trump flags and QAnon flags and wearing the Proud Boys uniform doing this shit. And then just minutes later, people online going, oh, that wasn't the Trump people, it was Antifa. Like, already they were changing the history books.
Yeah, it's I don't know, man. I don't know. Before I get too much more depressed, you want to take some super chats, audience questions and stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Before I jump off?
Yeah, sure. If anyone wants to call in, we'll take a call or two. DoomedLive_1 on Skype. If you just type in Doomed Live, it should pop up in the little search thing on Skype. But let's go to the super chats. I already mentioned the first two we received. Renee, so Trump was the Gabriel de Annunzio of these sad times. Do you know who that is, Jared?
I don't
either. But Renee is our regular South American viewer. So he often gives name drops South American politic stuff that I don't always know, but he usually explains it. So maybe you could drop another comment. We got a call though.
Gabriel de what?
De Annunzio. We got a call though. Let me take this. David.
Hey, what's up, Matt?
How you doing? Wait 1 second. I think I just lost Jared, actually.
Oh, whoops! Damn, you need to get him back.
I meant to. Yeah, 1 second. Let me get him back. Jared, you there?
Hey, yeah.
Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here too. We're all here.
Jared, you hear him?
Yeah, it's a big old party now.
Look at that. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Sorry for accidentally hanging up on you for a second, Jared. But you should chat me another screenshot, Jared, so your camera goes back into color. For people who don't know this, the craziest thing, Jared's camera came when we first set up the call before we went live. Jared's camera was in black and white. And then he tweeted me, he shared a screenshot with me, and it somehow kicked the camera back into color. It did not work this time, though, but whatever. It's fine.
If I click more buttons, does this do anything? Oh, God.
Well, I like the filter.
There we go. All right. Well, anyway, it's okay. We can make this work. So what would you like to talk about? David, right?
Yes.
Wait, is this Dave from Jamaica? Is this Dave from Jamaica?
Yes, this is Dave from Jamaica.
Okay. For people who don't know, Jared's listeners on Shitpost, Dave from Jamaica is a longtime regular caller into the Majority Report with Sam Cedar, and he now also calls into Doomed. So welcome again to the show, Dave from Jamaica, and what would you like to talk about?
Oh, thanks for having me. Jared, sorry. So I kind of share your pessimism, because I guess I see the same trends with conservatives here too, is that they're so easily motivated by very little. Like, all you need to do is somebody's getting something they don't think they should get, and they're ready to get, they get real heated emotionally. So it doesn't take much to work them up. I don't know if it's the way our brains are wired, and people with more who are more left-leaning, it's harder to get them worked up like that over anything. But I don't know if you can have that scenario where you have a left-leaning people nowadays to get that worked up. Not to hurt people, but you know, it's just the nature of the right-wing brain, I guess.
Right.
Not to kind of brain science it too much.
Right. Now, Dave, you actually, you know, last time you called in, I think it was the last time you called into the show, you talked about QAnon in Jamaica, which is, you know, that's, I don't think people realize that QAnon is worldwide now. And, you know, this is a crossover episode with Shitpost, Jared's show. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if his audience knows about QAnon in Jamaica. I mean, that's crazy. Why don't you break down a little bit of that? Yeah,
I would say QAnon proper in Jamaica. But
right,
you
but the same sort of
Q perfectly. Right. You described Q perfectly. Q might have its own theories, but it's like a big umbrella, and it's drawn little conspiracy folks together. So you think of it like the flat earth. There's flat earthers in Q. There are all sorts of people in Q. So it's kind of somehow managed to stitch all of these conspiracy communities together. As you said, yeah.
What's the biggest in Jamaica? What's the main one I think I remember what you told me, but what is the main conspiracy theory on the for the right in Jamaica that falls under the Q umbrella?
I would definitely say the one that falls in under there, that, you know, there's some secret government and they're trying to force people to do things, one world order, the same old crap that seems to always come back. But
right.
I do think the nature of Facebook and people who talk to other conservatives, this is how these things kind of intermingle. So you can keep on hearing the same type of crap over and over again.
Right, right. All right, Dave, thank you so much for the call. And be sure to call in again soon.
No problem. I will. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Take care, Dave.
All right, Jared, you still there? Oh, I just hung up on Jared again. Oh, here we go. There you are.
Am I still in black and white?
No, you actually are back in color, but I'm waiting for you to once again to get knocked out. But so far, so good.
Yeah, don't worry. Just give it a minute.
Oh, there we go. It happened just as you said. Let's go to a few more IMs, super chats here, And then I guess we'll wrap it up for the for at least the first half of Doomed and the shitpost here. I'm gonna go into a little members for Doomed right after this. Jonathan with a super chat: White America is so existentially terrified of becoming the minority that it's easier to believe Hillary is selling children out of a pizza parlor. Yeah, I mean.
Yep. I mean, like, the far right has so many different flavors and chapters and subgroups to it, like the Oath Keepers, for example, and the Proud Boys and QAnon. They all have different visions for what the country would be if they were ever able to gain a sizable amount of power.
Right.
But one of the uniting things that draws them together and something that animates these movements so much is just this deep, deep, deep anxiety. The world is changing. It is changing quickly. The demographic makeup of this country is changing. The culture is changing. Right-wingers lost the culture war, basically. People are, less afraid to be open about being, same-sex attracted or gender fluid or whatever. And, it's just like society is kind of like opening up a little bit more. And that scares the shit out of these people.
Right.
So they're looking for explanations for why this is happening. And, they're so desperate for something to make it make sense, besides, the simple thing, which is just the world is changing, get used to it, buddy, is these elaborate conspiracy theories about, like, well, this must be all part of a secret plan. Like, somebody has to be responsible for this. Instead of, like, well, somebody is, like, billions of people. It's just called, time is moving forward. But Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, regardless of the group, can be boiled down to, like, those kind of grievances.
Right. Renee lets us know that so Gabrielle D'Annunzio was a precedent for Mussolini. I mean, that doesn't tell us much, but okay. I see Renee's trying to call, but Renee, what, let's save your call for the next half of the show, because I know you have a lot to say. And Jared's gotta go in a minute. Let's wrap it up, Jared. Because I know you gotta jump. And I don't think we actually named who actually voted from the Republicans to convict Trump. So we got Burr, Cassidy, Collins, Murkowski, Sasse, Toomey, and Romney. I mean, do any of those names really surprise you, I guess? I mean, they don't surprise me.
I mean, a lot of those names are people that are either, like, in the process of retiring or at least have announced they're not going to run again, or they, like, just came off elections.
Yeah, so they got 6 years to...
Yes, they got 6 years to save face.
The Senate really is an institution that needs to be destroyed. I mean... Six. First of all, it's,
you gotta be
it's,
careful, Matt. You're gonna find your way into the Trump legal defense.
Oh right, all of a sudden. That's right. That's right. We didn't
like,
even
if the,
really.
If it pleases the Senate, we would like to show this video of leftist podcaster Matthew Binder
saying Senate must be destroyed. No, but we didn't even talk about that though. That they were so bad, man. We have to really quickly. Trump's lawyers were so bad. I mean, first of all, one of them even brought up the Antifa thing that we were just talking about, but he even upped the ante to something I never saw anywhere, which is not that Antifa was involved in the Capitol, but the leader of Antifa was arrested at the Capitol. I don't know where they got this. I know who they're talking about. They're talking about that guy who had a history of showing up at Black Lives Matter events in Utah. And his video, he was taking video at the Capitol, and he got on Anderson Cooper's show after the Capitol. If you just look this guy up, you'll find out that official Black Lives Matter groups in Utah had denounced him long before the Capitol and wanted nothing to do with this guy. They called him a grifter. They called him he was a clout chaser. So he wasn't someone who was down with the cause to begin with, really, in good faith.
And you got to be pretty bad for an organization to like take time out of its way to be like, just for the record, fuck this guy.
Like, and before he did anything at the Capitol, like this is months before, like no one even knew who this guy was, and they felt it was important to come out beforehand and say, we don't want this guy associated with us. I mean, it's so
it was the most laughable defense, but it was the defense of a defense team that knew they didn't have to do anything. Like the defense, so much of it was basically just like, if it pleases the Senate, I would like to present this epic Trump compilation video I found on Facebook about half an hour ago. I think it makes the point really clear, but you know, to be honest, I haven't watched past the 4-minute mark, so some of this we're going to be seeing together for the first time. You know, it's like,
right,
it's just but they didn't have to do anything. They could have gone up there and like held the microphone up to their ass and just like ripped a juicy fart, and like the Republican senators still would have acquitted Trump.
I think Murkowski would have said, I think she said on the second day, oh, this is, the defense is much stronger today than they were in the opening. And I'm just thinking of them opening exactly how they opened, and then on the second day doing exactly what you recommended, them just farting in the microphone and her still coming out and saying, oh, I think the defense had it much better on the second day than you know, to be clear what happened that you're referring to, they put together a compilation of like Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer and all these other Democrats basically saying the word fight in their rhetoric. Yet for some reason, there were never like democratically led street fights going on. I mean, I don't know what they think. And also the idea, they try to tie Black Lives Matter, the protests over the summer, to Democrats. Democrats hated that shit. They might have like defended it sometimes vocally, some of them, but it's not like the Democrats said something and Black Lives Matter responded. Black Lives Matter did the protests for their own cause, and the Dems had to come out and, based on what they thought was politically expedient for themselves, either be for it or against it. Like, it's not the same as Trump coming out and saying, be there or be square on January 6th, and then the people showing up on January 6th.
Yeah, not the same at all. It's just ridiculous. And for the viewers on YouTube who have stuck around this long with us, they're gonna get a special treat. I just noticed that my dog is down here. So,
is he gonna go on camera right now? Look at that!
Before we say goodbye, it's Pierre.
Hello, Pierre. How's the Instagram coming along, Pierre?
Oh, coming along great, he says. Oh, he wants down.
How many followers you got now, Pierre?
He's got like 300 something. I think almost 400.
Jeez, a dog has 1/3 of the Instagram followers I have.
Pretty solid for a guy who's like 10 pounds.
Right, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I don't post on Instagram ever, really. But so Jared, why don't you plug Pierre's Instagram and then follow that up with plugging for listeners who aren't already shitpost listeners, plug shitpost and anything else you want to plug.
Yeah, so follow my puppy on Instagram at Pierre Turbo, just spelled like it sounds, one word, no spaces or anything like that. For listeners of Doomed, I'm Jared Holt. I host a podcast called Shitpost. The I is an exclamation point. If you just type that in, it's on every podcast listener. And if you like the show, for people who are kind enough to support the show, we I put together like a bi-weekly newsletter. So like 1 week a show will come out, the next week a newsletter comes out, and it alternates like that. So if you want those newsletters, you can go to shtpost.substack.com. We distribute it through Substack there.
Wait one second. Before we go on, someone thankfully just reminded me in the YouTube chat, Sisyphean task. How did you not bring this up, Jared? I saw it when you tweeted about it, but it just did not hit my mind during the show. Your work was cited during the impeachment trial.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's all. You're not going to, I mean, I would. So what did they cite specifically?
It was an interview that I did with the Washington Post, where I basically was just like, yeah, January 6th is like kind of the biggest thing that extremists have pulled off, like in any given recent history in the United States. Like, this will, you know, lionize and inspire extremist movements for like probably decades, man. It's like, hardcore extremists still look at like the Unabomber or something to like admire and stuff. And for a certain slice of extremists, that attack on the Capitol is going to be like, you know, this rosy memory for them. That was the time they really showed their force or whatever. And so I talked to the Washington Post about that. And then I think it was Thursday, I was eating lunch, hanging out, not doing a whole lot of anything. And then my phone and my laptop just started exploding. And it took me about 5 minutes to figure out what had happened. But yeah, I got name checked.
Did they actually say your name?
Yeah, and they said Mr. Holt, which is what, you know, I think I will legally change my name to.
Wow.
But
yeah, man. Good for you.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. You know, a very, like, validating moment. This work rips my brains to shreds on a daily basis. And I, like, my job is basically to, like, eat poison, like absorb the toxicity and then like spit it out the other side. So it was kind of nice to get, I guess, like acknowledged and, you know, have it appear in the nation's record of what happened.
Right. Right. I'm proud of you, man. Good for you. I gotta add that I'm, you know, it's good that they actually cited you and gave you credit because, this is the first show since this happened, first Doomed episode since this happened. So I have to briefly tell you this. I already complained about it on the Majority Report when I was on Thursday. So CNN a few days ago put out a breaking news alert and said new video shows QAnon Shaman talking about how Trump was the reason he went down to the Capitol. And there was a video they showed as breaking news just a few days ago that they just found. And I'm watching this video, and I'm saying, wait a minute. And I search on my Twitter account, my own tweets, and literally a month ago, January, what was it? It was January, like, 10th or 11th. I was the one who found that video in the Parler archives. It was the first video found of the QAnon Shaman talking. It was the first video taken of the QAnon Shaman talking once he left the Capitol, saying how he went there because of Trump, the police walked him out of the and let him go, and that he was leaving because Trump told him that it was time to go via the tweet. And I found that video in the Parler archives. I looked. I was the first person to ever tweet that one. And they found it a month later. And they breaking news, Jared, breaking news. They found it a month later. No
huge
credit.
Scoop. Huge scoop.
No credit.
Binder snubbed. Well, for shitpost listeners, Matt, where can people keep up with your stuff so they can stay a month ahead of CNN?
There you go. You too. Oh, that's, I should really.
Smooth, right? Smooth.
That should be my new tagline. A month ahead of the mainstream media, right? At the very least, yeah. Ooh, youtube.com/MattBinder. My show is live streamed weekly. And as the show grows, I plan on doing more than a weekly live stream. But for now, it is weekly. Also, I put up standalone YouTube videos. I recently put together a video about the Boogaloo Boys and the danger of certain leftists giving the Boogaloo Boys a platform because they are swooned by their rhetoric. And it got a thumbs up from a number of major leftist political commentators online, such as Vosh and The Serfs. So you should go to youtube.com/MattBinder and check that out. But if you're more of an audio person, doomedpod.com, the audio version of the podcast, that's where that'll be. I take the live stream after that's done, and I put that up on the podcast. Also, follow me on Twitter at MattBinder. And really, you could search for me anywhere on social media. Just type in MattBinder in your search bar, and I'll more than likely come up. So, yeah.
And Matt, last thing, is there... you know, maybe like a dog somewhere. Maybe he's like 10 pounds, orange.
Oh, let's give him Pomeranian, another. Maybe. Let's give him a number, another name drop.
Any friends you know have dogs like that that you might want to promote an Instagram account for or something?
Yeah, one more time. We'll drop it right here. Pierre Turbo. Is that correct? Right? Yeah, I remember that.
Yep, yeah.
Pierre Turbo on Instagram. Just, you know, type that bad boy in. And a little Pomeranian pup will show up. And you might notice his dad. Is that way? Is he considered your son?
Of course, yeah.
All right, yeah, I don't call my cat is not my son. I already have human children.
dogs are a little different.
I don't think my next dog would be, because this is honestly the longest I've gone without a dog, honestly. I don't think my next dog would be a son either, because I have human children. I think the dog will have to be like just a loyal companion or something like that. A best friend, if you will. There you go. So Pierre Turbo is not my best friend, but he's a good dog. He's Jared's son. Check him out on Instagram, folks. All right, Jared, always a pleasure to do these special episodes with you. I assume we'll be doing, maybe we won't if you didn't have fun today, but I assume we'll be doing many more of these special doomed shitpost crossovers when breaking news happens.
Yeah, any, you know, this is a spot to be, if you will. We'll definitely be doing more of these in the future. Anytime there's a major political schism, you know, take it to Binder and Holt. Set you straight.
Why did we not become lawyers with a last names like that, Binder and Holt? Jeez.
Yeah. I'm going to get out of here, man. I'm just I'm embarrassing myself at this point.
All right. Have a good night, man. This is what happens when you do a live stream, I'm telling you. If people want to go back on my live stream archives, you see me slowly lose my mind once a week as the night progresses. Have a good night, buddy.
Yeah, take care.
All right, folks, we're not done here though. Don't jump quite yet. I see who is on the chat here asking, Jonathan T or Jonathan M. I'm not sure which one's your last name, but Jonathan, stick around. We are going to go to the second half of the show. Nothing will change for you live stream viewers. I'm just saying goodbye to the free listeners of the podcast. Stay right here on this channel. Live stream viewers aren't going anywhere right now. And you'll be able to call in. The phone lines are now open once again for calls. And I just dropped all I do the Patreon. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. Folks, I cannot do this show without my patrons. My patrons help this show grow. I am seriously taking that money and investing it big time into this show. If you're a listener, you know I've been upgrading equipment, and I have a new piece of equipment I've saved up for and just recently purchased, which should take this show to the next level once again. It will enable me to do much more on this show. I'll let you guys know. Call me back in just 1 second, Renee, and I'll be able to do much more. So it's patreon.com/Matt Binder. Thank you so much for all your support. If you cannot financially do it because times are tough, I totally get it. Don't feel compelled to do so. Take care of yourself and your family first, by all means. Support the show by just subscribing to the YouTube or the podcast. And everybody else, I will see you all in the second half of the show. Give me 1 second, and I'll see you all next time on Doomed.